Swami Bhakti Rokok Shutardev Goswami Maharaj, in introduction to his book Sri Guru and His Grace, is saying, "The freedom and individuality of the jiva are not only unharmed by surrender to the absolute good, but they really thrive in him alone. Individual freedom and interest are the part and parcel of those who are of the absolute, and so they are quite at home there, as a fish is at home in water or an animal in a healthy atmosphere." So, Maharaj, can you please comment on this individual freedom and interest?
Yes, because we think that by surrendering or being subordinate to another, that our independence or freedom is threatened. So that's why when we hear these things about Krishna being the absolute, the owner, controller of everything, everything is meant for his pleasure, his enjoyment, we feel that threatens our own position, our own free will, our own ability to enjoy or prosper. So what Guru Maharaj is telling us is that contrary to what you might think, this is how you can actually realize maximum freedom, is making your interest one with the absolute interest. The absolute interest is your interest. It's not trump your rights, you have nothing. It's easy to think that way, but actually, he's saying that his interest is in your interest. And again, we may think that sounds patronizing. But there is a point where even patronization is true. Like the parent or the affectionate guardian and the child. The fact of the matter is, it's patronizing when they say, "I know what's good for you." They do. The child does not know what is in its own interest. Of what the child's been able to experience, you know, candy, and these are all good things, right? We should just eat candy nonstop. Once we were invited to a place called Tribeni, which is near Panihati, and by the owners, we made them life members. They were these Ghosh brothers, three brothers, and they owned a sweet shop in South Calcutta. And so they asked this, they invited us for the weekend prayer, and they asked this one devotee, what sort of food arrangements they should make. And he said, "This is a brahmachari." He said, "Just sweets. That's all. All you need to do is bring rasgola, sandesh, misti doi, all of these things." Thankfully, they didn't listen to him. They made other things. But that, he said, "That's all we need. Like, that's all we eat." Because for certain obvious reasons. So the child or someone in a comparative relative child state, they don't know what is in their actual interest. Right? So the benevolent, affectionate guardian does. But we think, yeah, but when you achieve majority, then we don't like to be patronized. That's true. But we're still on the spiritual side of things. Although in the objective world, we may achieve majority, become experienced adults, we don't like to be patronized. So spiritually, we're in need of the affectionate guardian on account of our fetal, embryonic stage of development, actually, if we're lucky. So what to speak of child. So when Guru Maharaj surprised everyone, later in the same book, he said, how did he describe Krishna? Autocrat, despot, and liar. And that caught everybody's attention. Because nobody talks about God like that, right? They always say things that sound very pleasing, but to say autocrat, despot, and liar. And we had first heard this reading from Saraswati Thakur when he'd say, Krishna is the transcendental autocrat. Right? So we think in the Western world, autocracy, you mean like the kings, the autocratic, we you know, through democracy, we got rid of that. This tyrannical king who everyone existed to please them. Like Guru Maharaj told the story of the Persian king who was visiting France or somewhere, and he's going on a tour, and they show him a guillotine. And he says, what's that for? And they say, well, that's how we execute, how we administer capital punishment. We think it's the most humane way to do it. You know, it was designed and introduced as being a more humane way to administer capital punishment. So he says, I'd like to see it. You know, they said, no, you can't do, you know, give someone, I want to see how, no, we can't do that. You don't understand the people here. And he said, oh, then one of my men. No, we can't even allow that you will use one of your own men for this demonstration. And he said, then you don't know what is a king. Right? So he's saying, that type of power, that type of autocracy. So, but on account of the abuse of that, and as Kali Yuga, took hold, people think, we got over that, you know, we introduced democracy, and now every man is king. Every man is king in his castle. But you see, what is your castle? Your kingdom. You're not exactly Ozymandias, or maybe you are Ozymandias. But so Guru Maharaj said, autocrat, despot, and liar. That's Krishna's position. Saraswati Thakur said he's a transcendental autocrat. In other words, he's the ultimate and absolute good. In Hegelian terms, reality is for itself and by itself. He exists to fulfill his own purpose. What we're not told, what is his purpose? Enjoyment. So that's the good news. Right? Not otherwise. So he said, now, and he is a despot. I mean, there's no challenge, there shall be no challenge to his autocracy. And Guru Maharaj pointed out, because his position is the absolute and he's absolute good, even his whims are good for everyone. And if you try to check his despotism or his autocracy, we become the losers. Right? If we think, well, in this world, in the human world, we have certain checks and balances on the position of autocrats and despots because they do things that are harmful to other people. See, no, but because he's the absolute good, if you check his despotism and his autocracy, then it's not you gain, you become a loser in that instance. Right? So, autocrat, despot, and just as an example, you know, that just comes to mind is Ram Leela versus Krishna Leela. In Ram Leela, because he's in the role of a king, he has to follow the rules for kings. And that means that there are instances where by checking him, we don't receive the maximum benefit. And we're also told from Guru Maharaj that Balaram, Nityananda, when reflecting on the different pastimes they have, remember, he's generally Krishna's Ramanuja, means the younger brother of Rama. So he's always the elder brother. Therefore, it's a mixture of Sakya Rasa and Vatsalya Rasa, some element of patronization, protection, etc. But he says, reflecting on all their varieties of pastimes, and the Ram Leela, where Lakshman is the younger brother, he's saying, that's not my favorite of our pastimes. Why? Because when Ram is banished, right, he's going to be coronated the next day, the eve of his coronation, he's banished to the forest. The normal mood of Balaram or Nityananda would be to fight that, to not accept that. He will fight on behalf of his brother, his younger brother. But here, because he's the younger brother, the eldest brother says, Lakshman, prepare to go to the forest. And he has to say, yes, sir. Yeah, and he doesn't like that. So he's being restricted. Ramachandra himself is being restricted. Why does he have to banish Sita? To please the people. Like democracy. Although he's a king. He has to... The people are finding fault with the monarch, and that will be not beneficial for them. So he has to banish Sita, who's pregnant with twins. It's heartbreaking. Some people cannot digest this. But Guru Maharaj said, he's, as I told one of my friends who was having problems digesting this, he's sacrificing his own happiness for the sake of others. And then my friend said, but not Sita. I said, no, that's why she's so exalted, because she's making even more of a sacrifice. And we're told that the king, whenever he's going to, his Varnashramic position, he has to perform certain sacrifices. And as a king, the queen has to be by his side when he performs the sacrifice. So when she was in exile, they commissioned some yajna sitas. And then that, like, murti would be next to him, and she's the murti of Sita Devi, and then they would do the sacrifice. And as a footnote, if we want to understand some of the beauty of Ramachandra, right? He was so beautiful that those yajna sitas became fully conscious and imbued with madhura rasa sentiments in the presence of Ramachandra. Right? Because it's mentioned later, but that can only be reciprocated in Krishna Leela. So in Krishna Leela, Veda Stuti, Yajna Sitas, Dandakaranya Rishis get Gopi Bhav and Gopi Deho, and they can participate. But in Ram Leela, even these Yajna Sitas who became animate, conscious, and expressed conjugal sentiments toward Ramachandra were denied. So we're always told, Ek Patni Ramachandra, one wife. Sita, even though he's a king, and generally kings may have hundreds, one wife, Sita, Ekpatni. That's not Krishna Leela. And remember, from a devotional point of view, the position of the wife is seva. So that means in Ram Leela, that seva is limited to one person. That means restriction. So, why did I say that? Because when word comes to others before the commissioning of the Yajna Sitas, someone suggested that to Ramachandra that he take another queen. Right? That he had, there would be no fault on his part if he would marry again and have another queen. And Ramachandra refused. So when the news came to Sita in exile in the ashram of Valmiki, she heard this, she said, she was very happy and said, I have not been banished from his heart. Maybe for some niti shastra type consideration, I had to leave the king, but I haven't been banished from his heart. I'm still the queen of his heart. Right? So some subtle things to be realized there. But even in the pastimes of Ramachandra, the reason I introduce it, there's some restriction. He's the supreme entity, and he has to think like, oh, this isn't going over well with the people. So a diplomatic solution has to be sought. No such thing in Krishna Leela. he's apparently transgressing. Arjapatam, Arjapata means the Aryan path. Hitva, those gopis, they cross over it in their answer to the flute call of Krishna. Right? But we must say, again, as a footnote, a sidebar, if we understand Bhogtaram Yagyatapasam Sarva Lokmaheshwaram, everything is meant for Krishna's enjoyment, including us. That means he's never an encroacher. Right? Who doesn't belong to Krishna? And we say, as one man said to me, I was preaching in Calcutta on life membership, and there's a famous place called the Esplanade. Right? It's a major transit stop. And somehow there was a man there preaching, an Indian who was a Christian preacher. Because he said, "Hello, my name's John Thomas." You know, so that was kind of a dead giveaway. And I thought, oh, I'm like his mirror. Like, so he's the Indian who's pursuing Krishna consciousness, Christianity, and I'm from America pursuing Krishna consciousness. Like, so we meet, and we have a little discussion, and then we go back and forth, and there's no resolution. Then at one point, the venom comes out. And he says, why is Lord Krishna dancing with other men's wives? That's what I want to know. I'm like, really? Then I gave some explanation. Everyone, including belongs to Krishna. It's only Yogamaya arranging increasing the dramatic intensity by the forbidden nature of the relationship, but like in a play, there's no foul, there's no actual encroachment. I said, in fact, since everyone belongs to Krishna, why does a man in this world take some woman who belongs to Krishna as their property? And only in India will someone admit to him. The man said, I'll have to study these things more carefully. He said, actually, I've never read the Bhagavatam. He'd only heard propaganda from Christian missionaries. He'd never actually studied these things. And we had a nice resolution to the situation. But my point being, so it's in our, we never want that Krishna will be restricted in any way, because he's the ultimate and absolute good. But factoring that in, at the same time, Guru Maharaj has said, then about surrender, prepare to surrender yourself to a whimsical absolute. Guru Maharaj says all these things to like make us nervous, to press your buttons. Because if we think, so noble, so like that's all good. We say, no, prepare to surrender to a whim. You mean to the whims of another person? Yes. But who is that other person? He's the ultimate and absolute good. His whim is good for everyone. We can't imagine something like that. And in fact, we're against that. We're saying, that king, according to his whim, they should supply a man to be beheaded. No. But if it's the absolute, think again. So we see when sometimes Krishna is also nipping things in the bud, shall we say, and liberating people. Right? So what Guru Maharaj is talking about is addressing our innate fear and anxiety that by offering ourselves, surrendering ourselves to another, we're somehow losing our autonomy and our free will, our independence, and we're ciphers. We're automatons. But that is not the case. There's a type of love, affection, and self-surrender that is the ultimate, expression of free will. and autonomy. Like, to put it in another way, Guru Maharaj will say, Western culture is freedom for the senses. That's how it's in there. What is freedom? Freedom for the senses. To express your sensual prospect in any way possible or imaginable. That just freedom in itself is good. Right? Although it should be noted that even the framers of like the U.S. Constitution, they didn't conceive that like freedom without any sort of moral or other consideration was the idea. That was sort of assumed within the parameters of freedom of expression. As they say, and later in the court ruling about freedom of speech, you can't shout fire in a crowded theater and say it's freedom of speech, right? Because you'll cause harm to so many people madly trying to escape. So they showed there are some parameters for this sort of expression. But at any rate, so the Western mindset is freedom means freedom for the senses. Guru Maharaj said the Eastern side, Indian side, is freedom from the senses. When you're when you're no longer a slave to your senses, then you are free. And we could say, as long as you are under the influence of your senses, or a slave to your senses, how are you really freely expressing yourself? What is that self? Right. So everyone is very enamored by the freedom of expression on social media, right? But is that your actual self? Is it yourself that's free from prejudice, free from acquired prejudice, acquired tendency that is being expressed? Or is it a misconceived notion of self that is the result of sangskar or mental impressions accumulated life after life, and yourself is actually buried underneath all of these false impressions? That's something that should be considered. So Krishna, by his nature, he is free and independent. And by coming in connection with him, apparent dependence really is liberated. So in the pages of the Bhagavatam, it says, mukti arhidvanyata rupam swaropena vibhastiti, that real mukti, or liberation, freedom, self-expression, self-determination, is realized free from the misconceived notions of self, acquired prejudice and acquired tendency, the karmic dress of the material body. As I've told many times, the soul's, the biological expression of the soul's delusion. The body is an organic interface for the subject soul to navigate the material world. When you're free from that, then what? Nothing or zero or merging into the totality of impersonal consciousness? No. Swarupena vibhastiti. When they achieve their swarup, their spiritual form, which is, and what is it comprised of? Dedicating tendencies, as opposed to exploiting tendencies. Our present configuration is based on exploiting tendency. Right? When Srila Guru Maharaj quotes Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, saying that, I think it's the end of the Kalyana Kalpataru of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The last line he signs, you know, in the Nam Hut of Nityananda, the marketplace of the holy name, of Nityananda Prabhu. Bhaktivinoda, these songs that I've just presented, sign, you know, Bhaktivinoda, the insignificant sweeper, like I'm sweeping up in that marketplace. A sweeper's like a very low position. So, but Saraswati Thakur said, if in the Nam Hutta of Nityananda Prabhu, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a sweeper, then who am I? I'm one of the, what do you call it? Straws? One of the straws in the broom of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. If he's the sweeper, then I'm a straw in his broom. Like, and I thought, how beautiful is that? It's like, Trinadapi Sunichena, but in a very visual, graphic way, like more humble than a blade. I'm one of the straws in the broom of Bhaktivinoda. But then Guru Maharaj takes it further by saying, he's saying, if this is a sincere statement by Saraswati Thakur, and we take it that it is, it's not that he is just being clever. He's actually expressing something that is heartfelt, right? He said, then this reveals to us the units of construction of the swaroop in the upper world. So as I said, this body is the outcome of exploiting tendencies. The swaroop is the divine form of dedicating tendencies. So Guru Maharaj here is saying, as if it was being revealed, atom by atom, molecule by molecule, devoting devotional tendency by devotional tendency. This expression, this heartfelt expression, he said, it's on the basis of this sort of substance that the swaroop is manifest. And what is it? Self-sacrifice, self-giving. So we're being told in the Bhagavatam, real liberation is when you're offering yourself in service, not when you're asserting yourself exploitatively, right? Which is the general rule in the world of exploitation. Jivo jivasya jivanam. You thrive here at the expense of another. That's what that tells us. It's like Darwinian evolution, survival of the fittest, right? You live at the expense of another. Even I saw something sweet today. There was a cow or bull, the ones with the hump on their back. And there's a bird who's, what's the word? You know, not, they're not sitting exactly. What do they do? Perched on the hump. So they're like, it's a symbiotic relationship. The cow, on account of certain things they're doing or being things that are useful for the bird. The bird's perched on the back of this giant, relatively huge animal, but perched, and the cow doesn't seem to mind either. But there's some mutual exploitation going on. So jivo jivasya jivanam, one living being living at the expense of another. That's this world, for better or for worse. And what is the spiritual world? How do you thrive there? One living being serving another. Right. So Guru Maharaj said, it's that world where here we have to think, maybe the soil is not good. Maybe we live in Chernobyl. And we think, I don't know if this soil is good for me. You know, or maybe we live somewhere where the water's been polluted, the air's been polluted. We think, oh, I don't know if it's good to be breathing this air or drinking this water. So the very environment is a threat to our existence. And you see, and what's the spiritual world? Where even the soil has your interest at heart. The soil wants you to succeed and is willing to offer itself to you in service to ensure your success. Right? What is it? Toyam Amritam. What is that verse? Shreya, Shreya, Shreya Kanta Kanta Paramat Purusho Kalpataravu. The in Goloka, the trees are Kalpavriksha. Bhumi, Chintamani, the soil is made out of Chintamani gems. The Kamadenu, the desire, wish-fulfilling cows are there, like Surbi, and then Surbi Abhipalyantam. But then it says, Kataganam Natyagamanam, all the speech is song, all movement is dance. Gurur said, what is sound enhanced with beauty? Song. This is just sound, but sound with the element of beauty enhanced with that is song. Movement enhanced with beauty is dance. That plane where all speech is song, all movement is dance, and the water is nectar, the air, everything. And what is it doing? To facilitate service, not exploitation, to facilitate service. And how do you thrive? One servitor serving another. Everyone promoting another, not self-promotion, pratishta. The opposite of that, promoting others. Amanina manadena. Guru Maharaj said, means, generally in the world we think, by keeping someone else down, we'll maintain our superior position. He said, no, amanina manadena means you give position to others, and what happens? Your position goes up. Not that you go down by giving position to others. So everyone in the spiritual world promoting someone else. Where do we see? This is noted by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu to be a characteristic of pure devotion. How to recognize pure devotees? They're always mad with and lost in the praise of other devotees, not telling you how great they are, but they're noticing how others are serving Krishna and how they can learn from them how to serve. They could improve by observing the other servitors. And where is this demonstrated or clearly delineated? In the Brihad Bhagavatamritam of Sanatana Goswami. Every devotee Narada praises as, who could be more fortunate than you? Your service is so exalted. Your hearts are so pure. And they say, oh, Prabhu, by your grace, we have some good fortune, but we rather appreciate these devotees. Sends them to another, higher, higher. Each time, all those devotees deflecting that praise, and it's going higher and higher and higher. And where does it conclude finally, after going from the Shalagram worshipping Brahmins to the South Indian king to Puri to Indraloka to Brahmaloka, Shivaloka, Prahlad, Vaikuntha, Hanuman, Pandavas, Yadavas, Uddhava. Na tata priyatama atma yonir nishankara na cha sankarsana sri naivatma cha yathabhavan. Krishna certifying, there's no one more dear to me than Uddhava, not Brahma, Atmabhu Brahma, not Shiva, Shankar, not Sankarsan, not Lakshmi. In fact, I'm not as dear to myself as he is to me. So at what point does the infinite come under the control of the finite? Is that slavery? If you become Krishna's slave, what is his response to that? He becomes your slave. Is that a fair transaction? Whatever you gave at most was finite. If you gave your entire self, it's finite. And what is the result of the finite offering themselves? The infinite comes under their control. He becomes the slave of the devotee in response to this slavery. Right? The infinite becomes the slave of the finite. Have they sacrificed their independence, their autonomy, or gained something beyond any conceived autonomy previously? Right? That the infinite has become a plaything in the hands of the finite. And as Guru Maharaj would say, what finite can be entrusted with that? Only one who's wholly one in interest. They have no separate, they've realized our interest is the same. is one and the same. We're not. It's not that you're distant and removed and foreign to me. And no, your interest and my interest are the same. When they realize that. So, and that Uddhava, after Krishna has given him this unparalleled certificate, what does he say? Asamaho chararenu jushamahangsyam brindavane kimapi gomilatosa dinam yad dushtajam swajanam arjapatam chihidva bejur mukunda parivim shrutibir vimigyam. After I saw Radharani and the Brajagopis, my aspiration is to be a blade of grass, a creeper, to have an atomic presence in the plain of Goloka. That soil, you said in Brahma Sangita, is Bhumi Chintamani. In that soil, if I could have a position, and when Radharani, Radha, Padman Kirtadam, Vrindavan Jaranam, when she's moving there in her lotus feet, in the plain of that sweet service to Krishna, and the dust from the lotus feet of Radharani and Brajagopis come, and if I'm there, I'll be bathed in the dust of the lotus feet of Radharani and Brajagopis, thereby consecrating my existence. That's my aspiration. So what does this show? That who are the greatest devotees? Radharani and Brajagopis. And what are they doing? They're praising the other devotees. Then it completes the circle. They're saying, look at the devotion of Hanuman. He can't be changed. We want that. We want to be like him. You can't break his devotion to Ramachandra. Let us be like Hanuman. And this, they're praising everyone. And Radharani praising Brajagopis. And Brajagopi is always promoting Radharani. She alone knows how to fully, properly serve Krishna. We should push her forward. And then Radharani thinking sometimes out of gratitude to them, she's pushing them forward, something that's inconceivable. So what is real self-determination and real self-expression? Swarupena vivastiti. When all this karmic dress, misconceived notion of self is dispensed with, and the full servitor identity, dedicating unit, is expressed. So Gurumar said, in referencing to Shikshastakam, first legitimate prayer being, Ayi nanda tanunja kinkaram patitamam bishame bhavam budho, Kripaya tavapada pankaja stita duli sadrisham vritintaya. Like Uddhava. Right? Prabhupada said, as an atom of dust at your holy lotus feet. So here he's saying, although I'm Krishna Kinkar, that means Krishna Das, servitor of Krishna. He said, although Jive Swarupai Krishna Nityana, my eternal identity is as a servitor of you, somehow I am drowning in an ocean of forgetfulness and ignorance of that fact, and suffering like anything on account of it. So, if you would be, Ayinanda tanunda kinkaram patitamam vishame bhavam buddho, kripaya tava, but if by the mercy of your holy lotus feet, if you give me an atomic presence there, that will be good for me. And then proper remembrance can come. So, see, that's the first proper expression of a real target. The least, it's always the least aspect in the plane. If someone aspires beyond that, it's a fantasy, it's a hallucination, it's fictitious. It cannot be real. As we see, Uddhava, who's certified by no less than Krishna himself, and he came from Dwaraka after observing all these Dwaraka queens, and he's aspiring to be dust in the soil of Vrindavan, then what should be the aspiration of others? But then Guru Maharaj said, so once that is granted, right, you want atomic presence? Granted. Right? Because you've qualified, you've demonstrated you have no longer any exploiting tendencies. You want to enter the seva world. Your only interest is seva. You have no other self-interest than that. Seva. You want to offer yourself in service. All right, then you're qualified to enter that plane. Then what? What is the next one? Nayanam gala, no, before that. What's the sixth verse? Why can't I think of that? Nayan, is it Nayanam? Yeah, Nayanam Galarasudaraya Vadhanam Gadgada Rudhaya Gira Pulakar Nititam Babu Kada Tavanama Grahane Bhavishyati. Think, now he has all sorts of aspirations. Right? Before that, he's saying, only I want an atomic presence in that plane. Entering that plane, now so much inspiration for service. So then that can be expressed, because now it's a reliable self. Right? Now he's 100% pure, dedicated servitor. There's no limit to the service aspiration to be expressed from the heart. And that's the cause of this intense ecstatic response. Nayanam galadus, with eyes being flooded with tears, body trembling, ecstatic symptoms. Taking the name, Tavanama Grahane Bhavishyati. Yes.
Maharaj, sometimes we may hear you saying, be always suspicious about your motives. How can I know for sure that here and now I act as a guru server, not as a time server? How to deal with paralyzing doubts about my motives, whether I'm an advantage seeker or a truth seeker? Advantage seeker. Yeah.
Well, when Guru Maharaj said, someone's referencing me, I'm really referencing what Guru Maharaj said. He said, not to be overly confident in your own assessment or judgment of things. Right? Devotees don't have that sort of ego. We saw it in Gurudev, Guru Maharaj, Prabhupada, everyone. They some inspiration may come to them, but then they think, is there any precedent for this? Have the, you know, there's sadhu, shastra, guru, and Vaishnav. Does my guru approve this? If I can consult my guru, then I say, this sort of inspiration has come to me to proceed along these lines. Do you approve? As we told, Yudhamanya Prabhu, always saying to Gurudev, do you want this from me or not? Not a big song and dance about it. And he's just saying, is this what you want from me or you don't want this? That will be that's all I need to know in terms of whether I'm going to go ahead and do this or just abandon it like something, you know, foul and inauspicious. And if the approval from Guru is there, then he can proceed and dedicate his energy there. So sadhu, shastra, guru, and Vaishnav. We're always looking to see, is there a substantial reference to this in the scriptures? It is approved by my guru. Is it approved by the other reliable, experienced servitors of guru? Maybe I can't consult guru. I say, oh, but these are reliable, experienced servitors, senior servitors of my guru. They know how my guru dealt with this kind of thing or responded in these situations, so I can submit myself to them for guidance. Look, Prabhupada, when he's in America and he's thinking to go back to India, things were not going so well at the time, and his health was not good, so he's saying to return. He wrote Guru Maharaj and asked him, what is your opinion? And Guru Maharaj said, I think Prabhupada, Saraswati Thakur, has given you this field for your seva, you know, and you should continue there. And Prabhupada wrote to him, he said, in the absence of being able to directly consult with Prabhupada, Saraswati Thakur, I take it that you represent what his wishes are for me. How great he is, and he's willing to defer to the opinion of his godbrother, senior godbrother. Saying, I rely upon you to represent him to me. That's healthy. Because we can't analyze ourselves to the point of being dysfunctional, right? Questioning your every move. Right, to the point of being dysfunctional or not operating. You have to go ahead and do, right? Do the service and do it as best as you can and as far as possible and good consciousness. But it's no excuse to desist from seva is that, oh, my consciousness is not good. So I can't cook, or I can't do this, or I can't do that. That's not a legitimate excuse for devotees. Right? You'll have to persist. There's no room for failure either. Gurudev said about someone in Gaudiya Math, they did something wrong, you know, and then they told Tirtha Maharaj, I'll get it right the next time. And he said, it's not like that. You have to get it right every time. And I think, like, that sounds a little bit harsh, but where it might be easier to understand is in cooking. That you'll get it right the next time doesn't make the person happy. You know, you put salt in the sweet rice, or you did this, and I said, no, next time, no. I mean, what's in front of us now is inedible. It doesn't matter what you do next time. You should have got it right this time. And we were told in the beginning, because in San Francisco, where I joined, our deities were Jagannath, Subhadra, Balabhadra, and Prabhupada called San Francisco New Jagannath Puri. We had little Radhakrishna deities, but big Jagannath deities for the annual festival. But we were told, like, they're very forgiving, you know, and some percentages were given, like 76%, I forget, you know. And then we were told, you know, Gaur and Nitai were even more merciful, you know, or sometimes we're told the most merciful, you know, they're overlooking different offenses. But we were surprised to hear about Radha and Krishna, that no offenses are tolerated. Nothing is overlooked. Because Radharani is in charge of that. She doesn't tolerate you. You don't get it wrong even one time. So it gives you a hint of what it means to be in that plane. It's not for amateurs in that sense. It's not for practice. It's not for practitioners, people practicing to be devotees. It has to be perfect, more, you know, perfect, more perfect, and most perfect. That's a plane. Somebody thought, oh, where she's in charge, it has to be that level of perfection. So we don't want to be self-indulgent or indulged by others. Like karma kanda means projecting your desires or your preferences, wishes upon the higher. The lower is projecting upon the higher. Right? That's, and we just have to say that 99% or more of religion is that. East and West, is people projecting what they, trying to get divinity to more or less sign off on what you want and find out what do you got to do to get that. You know? But we're told that's karma kanda. It may be acceptable in the initial approach. Akama, sarvakama ba, moksha kama udarade, or udarade tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushamparam. Says in the Bhagavatam even, that whether you're akama, sarvakama, moksha kama. Akama means you're desireless. Approach Krishna. Sarvakama means you're full of calm. Approach Krishna. Moksha kama, you want liberation? Approach Krishna. That's why they're saying they already know. Once you come in the relativity of Krishna, which generally means through his devotees, and you have a glimpse of reality, the beautiful, and a glimpse of your soul's potential, soul's reality potential in that plane, you'll forget all this other stuff, whatever it was. So they're just unqualified saying, approach Krishna. No, but I'm like this, approach Krishna. Oh, I feel, yeah, approach Krishna. When I first went to the temple in Haight-Ashbury on Frederick Street, and the Isha Upanishad had just been published as a paperback, and I remember the day a little box arrived with like 20 copies or something. I wanted to buy the first one. And I saw it had like mantra one, mantra two, mantra three, and I said to the devotees there, I said, does this have a mantra like for however it is you feel or whatever mood you're in? And the devotees wisely said, yes. I thought, oh, I want this. This is the book I've been looking for. I thought it would be like, so if you're feeling like this, chant this mantra. If you feel on the contrary, like this, here's a good mantra. If you're in this type of mood, we suggest this. But actually, they said, yes. Just saying, read this and you'll get readjusted. So that's what they're saying when they give these advertisements like that. Akama, sarvakama, mokshakama, approach Krishna. They're very confident that once you have a glimpse of the beauty, charm, and sweetness of Krishna conception, you'll forget all this other stuff. Like Dhruva. Is that Swamin Kritartosmi Baram Najache? Remember Dhruva, he was, it starts off as a child with a big ego that's been insulted. Think about it. Because this is the days where they have, you know, they have children from the queen and the not queen and, you know, what do you call them, maid servants. And he's playing with the king's son, and he comes to find out that he has no rank. You know, he's the son of a maid servant. Maybe the other kid is doing some ego thing with him. You know, like, well, you're nobody here. Maybe you won that game there, but you're actually nobody. You know? And he goes, is this true? And he says, yeah, actually, you know, the mother explained the situation, and he's thinking, it's his ego is hurt, and he's thinking, then I want a kingdom greater than this king. In fact, well, no, Bien explained some history. And then it's come to mention even Brahma. Because then I want a kingdom greater than Brahma. She goes, well, nobody can give, who could give that? Well, the only person who could give, fulfill that kind of desire is God, Bhagawan himself. Where is he? I want to meet him. She's saying, well, we've heard that great sages, they go to the forest and they perform austerities and they find him there. 5 years old, he's like, goes to the forest. Narada comes, gives some, you know, instructions. Like, actually, you should do these things. And he is doing that. We're told he's what his breathing, the universal breath, the whole, he's so powerful, this boy, and his earnestness to achieve this, that the whole environment is now being controlled by him. And at that point, and he's meditating on Vishnu in the heart, Paramatma, and he sees the Paramatma in his heart, and he's saying, he's so beautiful, and he's so overwhelmed by actually seeing Paramatma in his heart. His heart is melting. So there's some real inner transformation going on at that point. And then the vision breaks. He's there in the lotus position, eyes closed, and he can't see him anymore. And he's heartbroken, and opens his eyes and sees he's standing in front of him. Who could be seen in his heart is now standing before him. That's Dhruva Maharaj. And then what does he say? Swamin kritartosmi varam na jache. This idea I had before about getting a kingdom greater than even the kingdom of Brahma. He said, I was searching for broken pieces of glass, and now I found the most valuable gem. So forget about that program. But then what happens? Does anyone know what happened? He gets Dhruvaloka, which is considered a Vaikuntha planet within this world. So he gets a kingdom greater than Brahma. But I remember Charulata, the Chinese girl. She was initiated on the same day as Dhruva, right? Ranga Devi's brother. And when it came for Dhruva, I told this whole story about Dhruva Maharaj. And then when I came, and I said, and your name is Charulata, and I mean, you know, Charu means beautiful, and Lata means creeper. Like, and she said, I don't get a big story. She could sing very beautifully and other things too. But I said, Charulata is a better name than Dhruva. It's, you know, like a beautiful creeper, a creeper of beauty. It's like, it's a very, you know, gopi laden name going in the direction of, you know, the holy lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. Be very happy with this name. And she was happy. Just needed to explain it a little bit. But no big story. She said, I don't get a big story. Hare Krishna.